Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy.
Well, hello, thanks, Dr. Jax. I'm Tim Holly. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 4.75. Dow futures down 28. NASDAQ futures down 18.50. Oil down 28 cents. U.S. Treasury hanging over 2%, 2.007, Maddie. So very close, very close. Gold up another $16. Unbelievable, huh? Weaker dollar, U.S.-Iran friction. Chiefs chasing calls. Other than that, that's okay. I'm up to 26s. I'll stay ahead of it. And I'll find something else to get a little longer here. What do you think?
We've been waiting on this gold for several years now, I believe.
I know, and then of course this is how many times have I talked about it on the air that you realize something, you think you're always early, that something is priced wrong considering what's going on in the world, and you kind of wait like a long time, and all of a sudden the whole world decides, hey, it's supposed to move. Like, what happened yesterday? Where was the switch that just got flipped that I somehow missed? But we're set up for it, so it's actually probably been as solid a 2 months for my clients as we've had in a long time. So, I just wish I, after not selling calls for like a really long time, when I got up to 24.5, 25, the GDX, which just hasn't been in years, I said, man, it's probably safe to sell some of these little fellas, and I think we're out to Septembers, but at least we got the 26s, and I'll find some other way to get longer in there, so we'll figure it out. It's not the, it's sort of like baseball, Manny. When you trade, especially if you trade options, it's some you win no matter what you do, some you lose no matter what you do. You just do an earnings spread at the 25 strike, and you wake up and the thing's 35, and you're like, well, there's not to worry about that one anymore. Or it opens up right at your strike or whatever, and you say, well, thank you very much. Then there's the ones that open up, some other place where all your skill is to get you either a scratch or a little bit of a profit. So it's like, was it Casey Stengler, one of the really old guys, said, no matter what, you lose 40 games, no matter what, you win 40 games, and it's the other 80 the manager means something, or something like that.
Yeah.
And,
which is true.
Yeah.
Even now, still true. You win 40, lose 40, guarantee. It's what you do with the other 82.
And you can, if you're, you notice the thing in softball, softball is a sport like anything else, and you end up, if you know you're coming into the playoffs and you want to be real solid, almost the last thing you want is three easy games beforehand, because you can develop a few bad habits and still win. And, the idea when you play any sport, I think anyway, you want to play somebody good enough where if you don't play well, you lose. Because the mentality is, I better do better, right? But if you just play in some league where you're playing, I was going to say something politically incorrect, so I won't, but say the teams aren't as good, all you do is slop along, and it doesn't do you any good, I don't think.
I would agree.
So yesterday was quite the interesting day. We embarrassed our friend Greg, who comes on the air once in a while. Greg Kupczynski is a lawyer, and he went to Marist. He was a few years after me. But he keeps much more in contact with the people. And there's quite a little cadre of graduates of Marist that have become lawyers. And so one of the guys picks up the whole tab for a lawyer outing down at Olympia Fields. I mean, you still have to pay for a foursome and all that stuff, but all that money goes right to the school. So it's it's pretty much 100% write-off to the school, because you're not giving the club anything. This guy picked it all up. Well, anytime you get a chance to play Olympia Fields, I mean, talk about old elegance. I mean, it's pretty special. Now it's down locked in a neighborhood that's not doing so well, so if you want to be a member there, you can be one much cheaper than you think you ever could be at a place like that. But still, it's pretty special. So we decided to get down there, and it's a scramble. So it's by a guy who works for me here, Jim Duran, JD, my right-hand man, who's, you know, he's played some this year, but he's a pretty lousy golfer. Greg's horrendous, and I haven't played 2 years, and let's just say the we're no longer thinking we're going to win long drive competitions or anything like that. That ship is long past the port. And so fortunately, it's a scramble. So our fourth doesn't show. And now it's, you know, it's looking like it's going to rain, and we're having a little lunch, and all of a sudden it starts raining. So I see this. There's these three young ladies that are, you know, passing out burgers and stuff. So the one of them says, well, it's probably going to be okay. You guys can play. And I said, by the way, do you play? And she goes, oh, yeah, I was on a high school golf team. And I said, did you play for Marist? She goes, no, I played for Lincoln Way Central. Is that the one they just closed? Isn't the guy who built all those Lincoln Ways, isn't the guy who went to jail?
I feel like I read something like that, yeah. But I don't know.
But those places, if anybody's ever, if you ever take the Prairie Path, there's a bike path out there, you go by one of them. Maybe go by the place. There's a Catholic school out there, too, that has, it's got a lot of dough. The comparison is unbelievable. It's Lincoln Way. Go by it. It looks like a university.
Yeah, Lincoln Way Central is in New Lenox.
Yeah.
Just south of I-80.
But, I mean, the place is, yeah, so it's there's one of them is along the bike. Anyway, but the facilities, you look at it and you go, wow. it's got to be, Marist, even now, when they've got the girls and everything, and they've doubled the athletic facilities, can't compare to this place. They had better facilities than Notre Dame did when I was there. I've never seen anything like it. And anyway, they had all this stuff. So she played for Lincoln, and I go, we don't have a fourth. She goes, I got my clubs. I'd love to play this course. So, of course, I mentioned this to my man, JD. What are you talking about? Last thing I need is some good-looking girl out there hitting the ball down the middle and me hacking into the woods. I go, JD, we need a fourth. I don't care. we're gonna come in 10 over without her. What's the matter with you? Anyway, so you can't please everybody all the time, shall we say, Manny?
That's right.
Which would you rather have? So I wouldn't care if we came in with her and her team, if we came in with a respectable, like, you know, one under or something, rather than 15 over if she wasn't there. To me, the choice is obvious.
100% agree.
Yep. Plus, she wanted to play the place.
And it'd be more fun, too.
Oh, well, yeah. Instead of talking to JD or Greg, yeah, I think so. Anyway, she was probably 25, maybe 22. But she loved to golf. She said, oh, God, I'd love to play this place. And I'm thinking, so would I, but you'd at least be in the middle. Anyway, so it started raining. And then they go, well, you can't, no golf carts. And this group is like, we're not playing. So we ended up getting the wash. But the
once it was carry only, you guys were out.
Oh, we were out. Because I'd give it a shot with a pull cart, but there's no way I'm carrying. I mean, plus, the amount of when I used to carry all the time, back in my youth, we'd go play 36 and carry. It's a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
But I
don't know if I could carry 36 now.
Well, first of all, when you don't carry, let's just say your bag picks up crap. I probably got 30 old balls in the bottom of the bag I would never have in there if I was carrying. That type of thing. But I'll tell you what, out of all the courses I've ever played, the hardest one to carry, especially the last hole. You ever played Big Run?
I have not.
The last hole has got to be a 30-degree angle straight uphill, par 5. To the point where you're like, what am I doing carrying up this? It's tough in a gas cart. I mean, that was the only one, but we guess this is how the world has changed. This is another CPI number. We used to go out and play, just drive out to Cock Hill number 4, Dubs Red. At that time, it was the unheard of price of $20. This is probably, I'm thinking I was in college, so we're talking 1972. But if you played number 4, and you just drive out there at 9 o'clock and walk up to the tee and tee off, there's never anybody there. So you play number 4, they wouldn't let you go around 4 again, but you go play 1 and 3. So we always played 36, we always carried. Just to give you the difference between a really good course, one day I was playing really well, and I think I had we weren't playing a blue tees or anything, we're playing a white tees, but I think I shot a 85 on Dubs Dread. And I went across the street at number 3 and had a 73. And I played better at Dubs Red than I did on the other one. Just the difference. But when you play...
I've never shot in the 70s, ever.
Well, when you play... I mean, those were those days. We were playing... You know, we'd go out two times a week and play... And we'd practice. So I'm going to say I was playing 3-4 rounds a week in practice. The difference is, and later on, I didn't play so much. You still almost have as many holes where you drive, and you know, you put one on the green and you two putt. I'm going to say your standard layup par type of thing. The difference is, I bet when I played a real lot that if I was around the green, I was 60% chance of up and down it. Where when you don't play very much, you're 5% chance up and down it.
Right.
Plus, you played at Cargill with nothing but sand traps. You got to the point where if you're in a sand trap, 50, 60% of the time, you're up and down in two. Because if you're playing sand traps a real lot, you'd rather have that shot than in the grass, really.
Right. But if you don't play a lot, you can't hit the sand.
If you don't, you're like, what am I doing here? I've been in the sand since last year, and that's a disaster.
I actually got asked to play COG 1 on Sunday, but
COG 1's easy.
I couldn't play. I had something going on. I've never played COG Hill.
Well, COG number, there used to be the old number one course. I know some of the history of this because my buddy Jim Virvek, his dad, this is how the world was different in those days. He lived on the south side right by Kelly Park. He was a hell of a softball player. And he would hitchhike out to COG Hill, which before there were any expressways, was one hell of a hitchhike. He'd hitchhike out on Friday, and he'd loop for 2 days because there was no jobs in the city. He'd actually get a guy, and then he'd make a buck playing or half a buck caddying. He became a pretty good golfer, but the place was owned by the COG Hills, hence the name COG Hill. But it was one name. I don't think there was a capital H. Well, the guy dies, and like the two brothers, the kids die. So it's the mother and like the two daughters, and there was the number one course, which was I think it's the front nine of number one and the back nine of number three. If you put those two together, you got a pretty solid course. But the other two nines are sort of easy, so you'll notice on number one, the back nine's real easy, and on three, the front nine's real easy, those are add-on courses. We bought all that property, and I think Joe Jemsek was the guy who bought it from the COG Hills. Joe was on the Pro Tour for a while. He won a couple of long drive competitions, but he wasn't Ben Hogan. But evidently, he was one hell of a gin rummy player. So a lot of the money on the tour that guys won ended up in his pocket, shall we say. So he buys the thing, begs, borrows, and steals. He buys the thing from the COG Hills. I'm going to say $250,000, maybe, something like that, which in those days was huge cash. His first three or four weekends were total washouts. It was like the Sam Walton story, where when his first Walmart he opened, the entire weekend was a washout, and the whole place flooded or something. I mean, a lot of people have no luck when they start, but they work their way through it. But as Joe got older, he still would go out there. He'd go to, on Sunday, he'd go out and hit the balls. They were one of the first places to have the beautiful grass driving range and everything, and on a public course.
Becoming more rare and rare.
Yeah, but they still got the gorgeous practice facility. So Joe would come out on a Sunday, and he remembered me from way back when I used to play with Jim Virvek's old man. And he'd come by, and he'd say, he had his suit on. He'd always have the suit and hat on from going to church. He'd come right out, and the guy was like 90. He'd come by, hey, how are you? What do you think of the course? All he cared about was getting a U.S. Open at Dubs Red, which he never got. He got the Western Open there, but he never got the U.S. Open. And he would, come on, how you doing? Hey, Mr. Jemsek, how are you? God, I was like 40, and I'd still call him Mr. Jemsek. And he goes, hey, Mr. Jemsek, it's Joe. Hey, how you been? And I hear old George died, which 30 years ago George died, George Virvek. But, the guy, talk about a dude who loved golf. All he cared about was that place. I mean, now, of course, Dubs Dread is what, $200 or something? I mean, it's a different world, but, it's still a beautiful facility. And you can go out and play the number one and three course. You can probably go play Twilight for, I'm going to say, 25 hours or something, maybe. You know, it's not, I mean.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Robin and I went out and played. This is how, I mean, we were carrying our clubs because Robin's brothers were both on the Michigan golf team. And there was one day, it was pouring rain. It was like yesterday. The sun was kind of going out, and we're hanging around in Beverly. And I said, you know, let's go out and play. I bet there's nobody going to be there. We show up at 5 o'clock. We're like the only people at the place. We teed off at 5 o'clock, and we were done at 7:50 walking. The number one course.
That's the best.
Number one course. I think I had a 75. I just was hitting them down the middle, hitting them on the green, and Robin could hit the ball, too. She couldn't putt, but she could hit. And our brother Neil was he was a finalist in the senior amateur I'm going to say 6 years in a row he made the cut and came and then went somewhere and played a really nice course. And it's like a five-day tournament for seniors. So, I mean, you not only got to be good, you got to be in real shape to play 5 days in a row if you're 60 years old. And but no, Neil still plays. He was a captain of the Michigan golf team. Speaking of Michigan, Joel's going to be insufferable, huh? I can't believe he didn't go.
Well, I mean, you know, college baseball is obviously not nearly as popular as football and basketball. But, yeah, that'd be a fun trip to go to Omaha for the College World Series. I actually have a customer that's based in Omaha and at my day job. And I guess every year forever, they would host an event at the College World Series, and they would invite all their big, you know, vendors to come out. And they stopped doing that the year before I took over the account.
Really?
So I've never got a chance to go, but some of the guys I work with that have been at the company for a long time are like, man, did they still do that? That was the best. They had, like, a suite, and, like, they'd have a tent outside as well. And all kind. I mean, it was just a great event, and I'd love to get out there.
Well, traditionally, before they had this new stadium, well, it's still an outdoor stadium, but the one before, I don't think he had any. I don't know if it had any shaded at all, man. And these things are usually before the weather got goofy the last few years. This year, last night, I think it was 82 or something. Normally, these games it's 100. Every minute, just brutally hot.
Yeah.
I remember somebody I saw went out there, and I don't know, the guy came back. He looked like he was a lobster. He's up there. But anyway, what do you think of this market? What do you think about now? If your president said that your company was acting like what a petulant child, would that make the president your father?
I mean, at least my company's father.
So was that what he said about the Fed yesterday? They don't know what they're doing. And they're like a troubled child or something, misbehaving child or something. What the hell? I mean, are we serious?
He called them a stubborn child.
Stubborn child, okay.
Yes.
And he's the father. I actually can't. And last night I was reading the story about the lady who put in a book that she had forced sex. He had forced sex with the guy or something, A lot of these stories, you read them, though, Manny, and there always seems to be things left out. Anyway, I was just reading bits and pieces. This is what's the lady's name, the latest one? In the clothing store on Michigan and Madison Avenue or someplace?
With Trump?
Yeah.
No, I didn't hear about this one.
Yeah, this is,
I mean, he's been accused of so many sexual assaults.
Well, this one was a straight up, flat out rape,
to follow.
According to her. But I don't see how you could be, let's put it this way. I'm not about to take anybody's side, surely not his. I don't see how you could do something like that in a store with other people, that if somebody wanted to scream and yell, I don't see how they... Let's say we're just so stunned by the whole thing, which I guess is possible. I read this stuff and I can't even begin to say, man. I don't ever want to take a side.
Well, he told you his strategy for getting women was, just grabbing them by the you-know-what.
Yeah.
And apparently that appears to be the case. I don't know why anyone would be surprised.
I think the more money you have, the more you might be successful with that once in a great while. But I don't understand what the fun is in that.
I wouldn't recommend it.
No, I mean, what? I don't, out of anything you've ever enjoyed about sex, nothing this man does is any part of it to me, or is accused of doing.
No, and I mean, for me, that's obviously. A non-negotiable. I would never vote for somebody that was involved in anything like that, that had any sort of audio footage of saying that has been accused this many times. I mean, we just see it so many times. Like when you're accused by this many people, when there's smoke, there's fire. I can't imagine supporting a man like this. I just can't. It's exhausting. But people don't care. They don't care about any of that.
Well, I listened to your buddy Bernie, and he sounded pretty good on Face the Nation, or one of the whatever one I was watching. Yesterday he comes out with this. I absolutely cannot handle about the Democrats and why I had to divorce myself.
Bernie's an independent, but go ahead.
Well, no, he's not.
Has been for 40 years.
Even though he thinks he is, he's not.
He's registered as an independent.
But
he votes as an independent.
But he's not running as an independent.
Because he has no... The way the system is set up, that's... I mean, well, Trump did the same thing. You have to join one of the two.
Well, if they embrace you, which they're going to. This whole idea that you identify people you don't like. First of all, you get this idea that you need more money from people. And I honestly believe that from all levels of government in this country, right now the problem is they're taking too much. I mean, yesterday I went through the numbers. I got it at 31%. That's not counting fees, not counting fines, not counting anything.
And I mean, and I don't disagree with you on that.
Well, the idea that you would essentially cripple a business to give money to your constituents, and that's the Chicago way. That's the Illinois way, and that's why we're friggin' broke.
That's what's gotten us into a lot of trouble.
Let's see, the teachers' union is going to vote for me, and I've got 300,000 votes there, whatever the number is. And by the way, there are only 400,000 people that vote, so it looks like I'm in if I can get them all out there. I'm going to raise taxes to the rest of you schmucks and give it to the teachers' union. That this whole concept of democracy, where the man's going to come out and say, we're going to tax people on Wall Street. And now, when you talk about the people on Wall Street, it caused the problem in 2007, 2008. I'm going to be... I was thinking about this last night, and I know I very seldom get on my high horse that much. Hey, screw you, Bernie. I mean, it was member banks that are still there, and it was the Fed not knowing that, where people bringing money over from China cheap and buying these mortgages. And it was the Fed who basically buried the S&O industry.
And it was the regulators too who
didn't
do anything because they were in bed with everybody.
Right, and as long as everything was working, everything was fine. And then all of a sudden, it didn't work. But they had a clue as to what was going on. So how is it that it's the people who trade stock on a daily basis I will say this. If the stock industry doesn't figure out how to mess with these black pools and people like that, the response of people who don't understand it is just going to be to tax it, to kill it. I think it should be killed, but not that way. What I would do is say you can't trade within a penny. I would start out with that. Now, most people would say, why would anybody have to trade within a penny? That's where most of your transactions are taking place now. Which to me is unconscionable. I'd say you can't trade within a penny. That's the way I would start.
All I know is, and I don't disagree with you, your greater point here, and obviously, this sort of talk could affect your industry, and so I know it's near and dear to you. But Bernie's appealing to the average American, and that's what he's trying to do, and when the average American thinks about 10 years ago and bailing out the biggest financial institutions in the country, and then now they have all of the money and even more, and those same people feel like, my life hasn't gotten any better. And now Bernie's saying, you know what, screw those guys. We're going after those guys. We're going to get your money back. We're going to forgive your student loan debt. And whether it's possible or not, I don't know, but that message is going to appeal to a lot of people.
Well, with the message...
And I think the message is right. I just don't know if
it shouldn't appeal to... But my point is it's two separate things. Should we have four big banks like we do? The answer is no. I mean, does a person doing a trade at PTI Securities, should he pay a tax to pay for a student loan? Why? What did he do?
I agree.
I mean, it's like the interesting part is most people don't know reason why they would understand. Is Bernie Madoff's people, that was a hedge fund. They were outside of the legal system, and they wanted to be that way. That's what a hedge fund is. It's a carve-out from the... And it has no regulation behind it. Okay, so the response to that is the PTI's SIPC went up because they decided retroactively to use SIPC for those people. They had no business getting SIPC. Absolutely none. Anyway, S&P, you got me. See what you did to me, Manny? S&P futures, I'll find them here in a second. S&P futures, I think, are still down 5. We'll be right back, Mr. Joel Ancona.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, on Homepage Stocks and Jocks, I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Weber on the board. Mr. Joel O'Connor in a second, who's got to be giddy about his Michigan guys. S&P futures down 375, NASDAQ futures down 1650, Dow down 17. A big story this morning is AbbVie to buy Botox maker Allergan in a $63 billion cash and stock deal. And I would say, then again, I don't get to say it, I would say just say no. I didn't see this one yesterday. Maybe I was on the golf course. Trump wants to cancel the defense agreement with Japan. What are we doing? I mean, for God's sake. Did you know about that?
I saw the headline. Jesus. I mean...
Dax up a point.
He's revisiting everything, that's for sure.
Yeah, Dax up a point, call that flat, footsie down 7, call that flat, kick around down 6, call that flat, so you're not making a... You're not getting a whole lot of activity trading the European markets today. Nikkei down 92 points, 0.4%. Shanghai down 26.9. Hang Seng down 327, it's 1.2. Oil down 26 cents, 57.64. Brent down 40, 64, 46. That spread is now $7.80. Natural gas, 229, still can't get out of its own way at all. RBOB, 185. We got gold. Watch, get a little of this. 1431 up 1350. 6-year high. All out of all in the last I'm going to say six trading days, just out of the blue. A copper up 2 cents, 272. Silver, 1540. That's up 3 cents again. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability. It's available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription to luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. We have a couple of crashes to report already this morning. On the Stevenson, the left lane is blocked on the inbound side just before Veterans Parkway. That's out near Bolingbrook in the southwestern suburbs. That's causing all kinds of delays as you're coming in on I-55, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. We do have a crash out in Forest Park on the Eisenhower inbound side, blocking the right shoulder at 25th Avenue, so that's causing delays on I-290. No issues on the outbound side. Edens and Kennedy still looking good, however, as are the Tri-State, and it looks like Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions as well. Weather today, we warm up today. Summer is here. We'll be in the 80s for the rest of the week. Today, partly cloudy skies, a high of 85. Right now, it's clear and 65 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 105. Right now, it's clear and 74. In sports, Cubs have now won two straight. They blew out the Braves last night, 8-3 at Wrigley. There was a benches clearing incident early in that ball game, incited by Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras talking a little smack to Tyler Flowers in the Braves bench, but no punches were thrown. Game two is tonight at Wrigley. It appears to be a tense series for the four-gamer this week. White Sox had a 5-3 lead at Fenway and blew it late. Red Sox walked them off on an infield single, beating the White Sox 6-5. Diamondbacks topped the Dodgers 8-5. Chief.
Is this anybody we know? Woman stranded alone at Toronto tarmac after falling asleep on Air Canada plane. Sounds like one of Joel's friends. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing there in the Windy City?
Was that a Michigan grad, this lady that fell asleep on the plane?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Somebody fell asleep on an Air Canada plane, and they moved the plane out in the tarmac. She couldn't get off. She was alone on a plane.
That happened. Not familiar with that story, Chief.
Jeez, you're supposed to know everything, man. That's because you were up late watching Michigan. So was I.
I was up pretty late, but you got an hour on you. Boy, Tommy Henry, one heck of a pitcher, huh?
Yeah, I thought they got close near the end. I was thinking, don't blow it. But plus, they got two bad breaks in the first inning. They could have been up 6-0. Got a horrible call at third base. Then the guy falls down.
It's a great story all around. I'm sure you read that the Michigan coach, came up under the tutelage of the Vanderbilt coach down at Clemson, and then also at Vanderbilt, and they have a really good relationship with their families and stuff. So it's a good story. They still got to win, two more games. I doubt they'll be able to use Tommy Henry again. So I think things are pretty even now, but certainly fun to watch. Not the national interest like you have in football or basketball, but Michigan is Michigan.
I was catching part of this story. They showed this guy in the stands, and the dude looked in terrific shape, big guy, and not fat, just a big, tall dude. Said he was part of the 62 championship team or 64. I was just hearing it bits and pieces. So get a load of this, man. The guy threw both ends of a doubleheader in a back then. Guess how many pitches?
Total?
Yeah.
170.
331.
Oh, my God.
So to say we look at things differently today is an understatement.
Interesting thing about that family is, obviously the grandfather, played in Michigan. The kid had a nice hit last night. But they have an uncle. The kid's uncle has showed up at a couple games during the season. And every game that he's been at, they've lost. So they are not allowing him to attend any games at the World Series. You talk about superstition. I thought not only traders were superstitious, but read a story about that. Kind of interesting.
Hey, how did the trading summit go?
Trading summit was fantastic. We had over 500 people attend, 130 people in the trading lounge. Banged out some good trades for him, discussed a lot of strategy. My co-host of the show, Dennis Dick, put on two amazing presentations One on, kind of the laws of pre-market trading, and then the other thing on high-frequency trading. He's the only person I know that can give a 20-minute presentation in 9 minutes.
Well, it's high-frequency, you know?
Those are the best presentations, though, as an audience member, when you pack it in and keep it fun and keep it fast.
Yeah, great slides. My ears were tired at the end of his presentation.
Where were you guys? What was your venue?
New York City at the Sheraton Plaza Hotel on 7th Avenue, Times Square.
I think I've been there. As a matter of fact, I stayed there. Is that the one that has the ball? It's on top of a theater?
No. No, I believe it was 7th and, 50th. I don't know if it's on top. No, you walk in right on the first level, but nice hotel. I got to say hi to Dr. J. He made a few presentations there. Peter Schiff, the Eternal Bear, was there as well, and Whitney Tilson. So we had some good speakers in the main room, kind of talking macro stuff. And then we had people in the trading lounge. They all brought their computers with them and discussed a lot of strategy. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you guys putting the word out there on it. Certainly helped for the tremendous turnout.
Well, cool. How much further is our man going to go bitching about the Fed? And he's reached kind of the end of the road here, I think. The stubborn child stuff.
I don't know. I mean, I talked to some Wall Street analyst, and they're looking for a half cut in July. I don't want to sound like a broken record on this, but I sure like to see him hold back until we get a little bit more negative data. But they acquiesced a little bit, popped the market to all-time highs on Friday, the Quad Witch expiration. And we're backing off some, but I think the next couple of days are going to be real important for the market. You know, after you have these expirations, a lot of times you have a turning point in the market. And so far, we're holding in there. So for you long-term investors there, I'd really like to see a continuation of that expiration move, continue to make some new all-time highs, or we're just going to be in that the trading range that we've been in for quite some time.
Well, I just what was the movie My Cousin Vinny? How much more is riding on this case? I don't see nothing in my education or experience leads me to believe that going from 2.5% to 2% is going to solve the problems these guys think it's going to solve.
Yeah, well, the original QE came in a very important time, during the financial crisis. This couldn't be more polar opposite time in the economy, unless they're looking down the pipeline and they see something that we don't. But hopefully they're looking at the data, being forward looking. But right now, it's doing a tremendous job out to keep this market right at all time highs.
We only have a minute, Joel, but real quick, in the midst of all the shall we say the rumors that are starting to fly in Congress about some of these drugs and some of the prices in the medical area, really from both sides of the aisle, how can you possibly let this AbbVie Allergan thing go through, even consider it going through?
I don't know. I mean, this is not the only mergers that are going on in the sector. A lot of questions remain. I was just looking at it, and I see it up 42 points.
Yep.
I'm like, 170?
Yep.
I mean, holy smokes, that's quite a bit off its all-time high. But these companies are looking for growth, Chief, and they must have something else in the pipeline that we don't know about. But
if it's worth
you're seeing a lot of it.
If it's worth 30% more to them than anybody else, it means they're going to raise prices. The economics are just right there.
I can't disagree with you.
Joel, take care, buddy. Good luck on Michigan. We'll watch him again tonight. S&P futures down 475. NASDAQ futures down 20. Come back. Kenny Pulcheri back by popular demand.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomorrow's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures down 350. NASDAQ Futures down 17. Back from worldwide vacation. He's sailing around the world or doing something on his 150-foot yacht. Mr. Kenny Pulcheri. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right.
Listen, I'm good. I'm back in the States after this really spectacular vacation. Like I said to you, and some people maybe have seen the pictures and stuff, but the Dalmatian Islands off the Croatian coast on the Adriatic is just beautiful. And if you've never done it, you should put it on your bucket list because it's a different world, right?
You didn't mention where you were from, did you?
No, I didn't mention where I was from, but it was quite obvious. I mean, I talk to people, know right away. But I got to tell you something, and I said this one day on, especially one of the days I think Trump was tweeting something, you know, creating chaos around the world. But, you know, it was like nobody over there cares. Nobody really cares what Trump tweets, what he doesn't tweet, whether there's a trade war with China or not, whether there's, you know, whether Iran's blowing up oil tankers. Nobody seemed to care at all. It was a different world. And it was actually, you know, for 2 weeks, it was kind of nice to be completely disconnected.
Well, you're disconnected, but I don't think it affects you yet.
Well,
you and I are old enough to know that it eventually affects you.
Right. Well, you know, maybe so, but in some of these places I was at, you know, you go to an island like Kabar, or you go to Trigir. You know, they're very, very small islands off the Croatian coast that you could be in a whole different world, and like there's not even, I didn't even see, you know, the New York Times or the International Herald Tribune at all anywhere I went. I saw none of those newspapers, and I got to tell you, it was peaceful. It was just peaceful. It was really great, and the weather was spectacular. And the Adriatic, by the way, if you've ever gone swimming in the Adriatic, yeah, that's got to be on your bucket list because
wow.
It's spectacular.
Well, I think one of the Stacks and Jacks bucket list is like a week with all the contributors in some huge estate in like Siena or someplace. I bet we'd have other than arguing with each other to be quiet.
So when are we doing that?
I'd be ready tomorrow, but are we gonna invite Dr. J or not? Or is he too much trouble?
Say it again?
We gonna invite Dr. J, or is he too much trouble?
No, we could invite him. He's not too much trouble. It'd be a few laughs, right?
We'd have to leave. His cell phone's got to stay at home, though.
Right, because he'd be hitting his Instagram and invested too more than I did.
Oh, I know. It's unbelievable. So what do you make of all this, and how come the entire world, after me being in long thing for 4 years, decided that gold is the place to be all of a sudden last week out of all this time?
Well, I think there's two things, and I said this yesterday in my note. For a while, gold, for the last couple of months, gold has been stuck in a 1280 to 1300 or 1305 trading range. And then it finally, at the end of May, hit all three trend lines, the 50, 100, 200, were all converging right at the 1310 level. And on the 31st of May, it tested it, it breached it, it went up and through. And then you had all the crisis. You had Iran blowing up the oil tankers. You had increasing geopolitical tensions. And that just caused, like, in my opinion, A, a flight to safety, but B, once it broke through those three resistance levels all at the same time, it just gave it an extra shot. You saw it ran right up to 1350, and then last week, toward the end of the week, you saw it ran to 1400 after Trump started banging the drum about imposing severe sanctions on Iran on Thursday and Friday. And so it makes perfect sense as that flight to safety. I think it had been undervalued for a while, and now it's just playing catch up.
I mean, the 4 years that I've owned it, it's been undervalued. I think so.
Well, listen, gold is gold, right? But I think now, especially when you talk about lower rates, you talk about the ECB cutting rates, most of them, you talk about the U.S. cutting rates, you talk about the geopolitical tensions, you talk about the ongoing trade war, all that stuff just causes people to, you know, that's a hard asset, and in times of kind of real concern, people will buy it. And so I think for the last couple of years, you know, although those concerns are still there, it just feels a little bit more, much more unsettled right now than it has over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, in my opinion, just because now you got this whole nuclear Iranian into the game in the middle of the trade war with China. And although I think the trade war with China is going to come to an end, and I don't think it's going to come to an end today, this weekend at the G20, you know, people are expecting a deal. I don't think you're going to get a deal. I think what you're going to get is you're going to get another conversation about let's try to move forward, let's put it all on the table again, let's try to negotiate this. I think that's what you're going to get. I think that's what the market expects you to get. The market is not expecting, oh, here we go, sign the deal, it's all done, you know, kiss and goodbye. I don't think that's going to be it at all. But if you don't get that movement, if you get all of a sudden Trump throwing a temper tantrum and everyone walks away from the table, then I think you see the market, you know, is very frothy at the moment, because I think it's been run up ahead of the expectation. And you and I both know, you know, expectation versus reality, and the market likes clarity, not uncertainty. And the minute it becomes more uncertain, then the more volatile it gets. That's the risk this weekend.
Is there a chance we could be reaching a point where, I'm listening, I'm watching, and I'm not, I've stopped doing the tweet thing as much. Well, I do a little bit, but I do less, because at least I'll see them for my clients. But I'm getting this feeling that the rest of the world, and who knows? I can't. It's hard for me to speak for the Chinese. I can't. You know, it's hard for me to speak for my softball team, for God's sake. But are we reaching a point where people think you can never have a deal with this guy? I think we are.
Reaching a point that you have to deal with who?
I'm saying
with China or with
Trump? The people in China think that you can't make a deal with this man. I mean, look what happened to the Mexico deal. Look what happened.
Oh, I got you. No, I don't, you know, I'm not so sure that they think that. I think that Trump's style is exactly what we all know. He's a little bit of a bully, right? He stamps his feet and he makes all kinds of threats. But when he gets people to the table, I think that's where you see him become more realistic and back off. And you've seen that a couple of times. And so I think, he's in, you know, with this whole China trade war thing, it's been going on for, what, 20 months now, so that so that now I think he's got his back against the wall, and he's got to give that impression, like, look, I'm not backing down. Here's what you have to do. But then I think if they come to the table, I think you're going to see that this weekend. I think you'll see a softening at the G20 this weekend, and I think that's exactly what the market thinks as well. And then I think, yes, he'll be able to make a deal with him. It may not be the perfect deal, may not be the ultimate deal that, you know, that he wanted, but that's what compromise is all about, in diplomacy and leadership, right?
Well, if at this point you just back off and any deal's a good deal, that's not a good outcome either.
Well, that's true, but I don't think he's going to back off and say any deal's a good deal. I think he's going to back off from a lot of the threats. I still think there'll be a significant change in the agreement, and there'll be a better deal. And quite honestly, who knows? It may, in the end, it will end up being better for China as well. If we come to a fair and good deal. And I think that's really what he wants to do. I think right now he's pounding the table that it's so unfair at the moment, it's so weighted on China's side that it needs to be rebalanced.
Well, right now there is no deal,
disagree
right?
with that.
We don't have any deal at all with them right now.
Well, the prior deals, right? What we've been operating on under the last 15 or 20 years, those trade agreements that, you know, the ones that he's trying to change, the ones that he's trying to modernize, I think that's right. I think they do favor China. I mean, look, the whole intellectual property, the fact that, you know, as a U.S. company, you have to go to China, but then you have to partner up with a Chinese firm, and then you have to give up, you got to pull your pants down and give them all your intellectual property. Otherwise, you can't do business there. Meanwhile, we don't do that in this country.
So why don't we?
Foreign companies come here in this country, they start their business, we don't ask them to partner up with us, we don't steal their technology, we don't steal their intellectual property. And so in that sense, I think he's right. And so, and I think a lot of people think he's right. And so, you know, if you can hammer that out, and you can get some movement on that and some compromise, I think that ends up working out for everyone.
Well,
and I think that's really where he wants to go.
I think it is. I think it's, well, we only got 2 minutes, but one of these days I'd like to get you on. We'll talk about this. I think it's absolutely unrealistic, Kenny, because these are issues with our people. If you sell your company to China, you can't sell. The rules should be on this end. I honestly think he's totally wrong with the approach.
Okay.
The rules should be at this end.
But are we selling the company to China, or are we just going to China to do business there?
They do either one, but I'm saying we should do the same thing. Okay, what I'm saying is if Polkeri and Chief Enterprises go over there and they say, all right, give me all your blueprints, but by the way, you'll be able to sell to a billion people over here, and you and I take that deal. It's either got to be illegal for us to take the deal, or it's our call.
That's correct. And so I think what he's trying to say, it's illegal for them to take it from us.
But you're never going to... I'm saying you can't say it was illegal for Hitler to ask for the plans of the P-51 Mustang. You had to tell the people here, don't give it to them.
Right. Correct. Correct.
Right? I mean...
Correct. And so let's see if that's what we get, right? See if that's what we get. We're certainly not getting that yet because China's pushing back on it hard, so... We'll see now at the G20 what kind of comes out of that. Like I said, I don't think you're not going to get a deal. But what I do expect you to get is some movement, some discussion, some, you know.
I would agree. I mean, I really hope for that. Obviously, because I mean, this is not helping anybody. What's going on? Hey, you're remarkably up to speed for a guy who's been. If you had to go back to one place, where would it be?
I have to what?
If you have to go back to one place only that you went to, where would it be?
I gotta tell you, I was fascinated with Dubrovnik. Dubrovnik is very much a city, you know, not like New York City, but it is very much a city, and it is, the history is phenomenal. The architecture, the art, everything in Dubrovnik was beautiful, and it sits right on the coast, so, you know, the Adriatic is right there, and so you get the best of everything, right? You get the best of history, the best of architecture, the best of food, and you get the best of the water and the ocean and the coastline. Dubrovnik was really, really.
Now, none of that stuff got wrecked when they were all fighting?
No, you know, and that's really the unbelievable thing. And the locals, there are some locals that it was very difficult to talk to them about the Civil War because of their own experiences, but there were others who were actually aching to talk about it, aching to tell you what it was like. But what we didn't see anywhere we went in Croatia were images of that destruction. You know,
really?
You didn't see bombed out buildings, and you didn't see bombed out bridges. It was really amazing because it was only 30 years ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long
ago. It was really amazing. Now we didn't go way inland. I don't know if there's more damage on the way inland, but listen, we were in places like Dubrovnik and Šibenik. Šibenik got hit hard, but yet when you walk around Šibenik, you don't see any of those. You don't see any of the ramifications of that bombing. You know, that war 30 years ago. And I thought it was beautiful. Clean, and the other thing is clean, not a paper on the street. It was anywhere I went in Croatia. Not a paper on the street. It was unbelievable how clean it was.
Well, they don't have any Americans there throwing stuff on the ground.
I'll tell you this, the sad part about it is, because we did it from the water, right? We did it on a yacht and went from island to island on the water. What I did find is as you go along some of the coastline, there's a lot of trash in the water. And apparently the trash comes from, the Albanians apparently are just dumping everything they got. They just dump it into the Adriatic, and it gets washed, you know, gets washed out to sea, and it gets washed along the coastline. So there was some island in Croatia that it's heartbreaking, because as you pull up to this gorgeous island from the, you're looking at it from the water, but when you get close to it, you see all this plastic and trash and crap in the water. It's that part, I think, was really kind of disorienting for me. It was a little bit discouraging, but that was just in parts. It wasn't all over. But, you know, they blame the Albanians for that, so that's a whole other conversation.
Well, but it sounds like we should be in the skimmer business. They could use a few.
And that's exactly right. There's your opportunity.
Kenny, I'm glad you had a good time, buddy. Talk to you next week. And welcome back. SP Futures down 2.25. NASDAQ Futures down 16. Be right back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Jeff Joseph is from Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 4. NASDAQ Futures down 15.75. Jeff just asked me an interesting question on the break. So when you put money to work now, where are you putting it? And Jeff, what you have to zero in when you're when you've got a lot of money you're putting in there. There really are only, I'm going to say, 8 or 9 places we trust the liquidity, because when you've got calls, for instance, that the underlying will move through the call strike, you need to be able to move up and out at a reasonable price. You can't be having $2 wide markets, or you just kill everybody. And that's why I just got a big client not too long ago, and one of the IRAs, the dude had, I'm going to say million plus, and they're in all these stocks that are all more high-tech stocks, but I won't say high-tech, but the ones that are in the QQQs.
High beta.
Yeah, and but I'm looking at some of them, and there's like 20 of them, and he's got Amazon, he's got Google, he's got, Facebook, and he's got some QQQs, and I said, most of your stocks are in the QQQs. Yeah. Why don't we just get rid of those and buy more of the QQQs, which I can hedge much easier, because some of the stocks, I'm looking at it, and he had $250,000 in a stock. God's sake, Jeff, there's no weeklies, and the markets are dollar wide. I go, I can promise you I can hedge this one, but you know what? I like to be able to deliver more than I promise, and I can't imagine being in something like that, and all of a sudden the market goes to hell or something, and I got to make a trade. So I really do stick to the places. I'm going to say we're virtually all QQQ, Russell, Spider, XLE, because some people like oil down here, and we've had a few decent weeks in oil after not so good. GDX, GLD, you can be in those things, but there's probably I just put some people first time ever in the XLB, which is the materials sector of the S&P. There's like, well, I guess there's 10 now, aren't there? Because they broke the
sectors.
Yeah, they broke the XLE up into real estate and then the financials, right? They used to be together. But most of those, I've got some people in the XLV, which is the medical piece. But even not all of those are. I'm always fixated on what's going to happen on a busy, crazy day. Can I still do what I have to do for people? And there's surprisingly few spots where you can say yes to that. So I as much as I can, I heard my gang heard that's those spots. But I mean, if somebody says, I got 2,000 shares of Apple and I don't ever want to sell it, well, then you work with that. But by and large, if somebody drops me 7 figures, the last thing I want to do, Jeff, is to start picking stocks. I mean, you get paranoid on that, because when I started the business, I won't say what year that was, there were 125 option stocks. And when they defined risk in those days, you remember the 80s, I mean, you don't remember the early 80s, yep. But when they defined risk, it was selling calls on a stock that got taken over, like Allergan today. That was risk, because none of those stocks ever went out of business, even as low as the market was. When I started, the market was like 800 to Dow. So, I mean, but nothing went out of business. Now, years later, imagine yourself in my position as a broker. And 12 years ago, your mom walks in with her broker and says, "Hey, Chief, what do you think of these stocks?" And she's loaded with airlines, Sears, General Motors. Pick the names that were like the Chicago's who's who of stocks, right? And I said, "Boy, they all look pretty good to me." Bear Stearns, and every one of them went to zero.
Sure.
I just never want to be, because I have no idea whether Intel. I think it's a fine company. It's been around forever. To be honest with you, the only way I could find out if the president is gambling all the money away at night is to read it in your magazine. How am I supposed to know? Right? You guys might find that out. I won't, right? I mean, the last thing I want to do is buy something for somebody and something come out of the blue. That's why I could never put anybody's money in Philip Morris or any of those places. I'm like, how can you ever explain to somebody that out of all the stocks in the world, you put your money, somebody's money in some place that has, 1,500 legal things going at them on any given day? It turns out they ended up fine and all that stuff, but how would you know? I mean,
well, you've just defined why practitioners and investors have leaned so heavily in favor of index products, but for better and for worse. The good news about what you just said is that you're focused on the volatility and liquidity, which is, as you know, as a professional trader, is the key to being able to navigate and manage markets and manage and grow wealth. Is focusing on those two things, liquidity and volatility. But investors tend to migrate towards passive products for different reasons, just purely for the simplicity of it and nothing more than that. So yes, there's the benefits of that liquidity and being able to manage volatility more effectively because of the derivative products that allow you to hedge around those passive products. But the downside is that they set it and forget it. And, you know, fortunately, things have worked for the most part for passive buy and hold or forget and hold. But it's still not an optimal scenario when nobody's really keeping an eye on risk and exposures. And, you know, it's one of the things about active management that has been lost in the shuffle of the growth of the passive investment craze, is that there are some true benefits of active management that are being lost with the, you know, with all the money that's flown towards passive index products.
Well, Jeff, I think both of us are capable, and I'm gonna say that silently over there, your knowledge of the history of the market probably rivals or is better than mine, but you're pretty close mouthed about it. But I'm gonna say you and I were not alive in 1929. But I'll bet we could pick several 10-year periods or 8-year periods where the best thing you want to do is buy and hold and go on vacation. And then there were 8 to 10-year periods where that's the last thing you want to do. And it totally had to do with the timing. Like, the buy and hold theory to me is always, it all depends on when you bought and when you held to.
That's true. That's exactly right.
But, I mean, obviously the last 10 years, how do you argue with the buy and hold theory? Right. Well, up until maybe last July.
Yep.
But, I mean, how could you argue with that? I mean, if you're charging anybody any kind of fee, if you made any kind of trade whatsoever, any commission, did anything, all you did was detract that help if you bought a put for 8 years. I mean, there were a couple times we made a dip and came back up, but by and large, it was buying collision insurance on a car when the car didn't start or something. I mean, what's the point? But now it seems to me that we're sort of out of that a little bit. I don't know, what's necessarily causing it. Maybe we're just a little too high. I don't know that. I'm stunned that people are so convinced that the Fed by a quarter point is going to save the world.
Right. Absolutely.
When there's lots of times in our lifetime if you read history, there have been times when it's egregious that, the Fed is pulling money out when they should be putting money in and still we're growing. And other times they're pouring money in and there's no growth at all. So it's not, there's a lot of underlying things that are happening. It's not just the Fed.
That's right. And there's a lot of opportunistic scenarios that are lost to investors because they forget the reality that since 1950, there's been 15% declines about every 270 days, an average of every 4 years. And, of course, the last one was just, December 2018. And then 20% or more every 7 years, average length about 430 days. And those are distinct opportunities to, increase the outcome of your investments. And, you just lose track of that when you're in a strict passive hold mentality.
What do you, it's interesting that, when I was in, first learning economics, so it was in the early 70s, mid 70s, the late 60s, I mean, I don't expect you to have been up and doing this stuff because you're younger than me, but we went through a period of time where there were people who really thought you could fine tune the economy. You could essentially erase the business cycle. And, these were the whiz kids of the world. I mean, a lot of them got caught in Vietnam, but the guys like McNamara and people like that, they really felt that you could fine tune the economy. Just when the economy was starting to go down a business cycle, you could do something taxation wise or whatever. You essentially round out the business cycle. I mean, I'd say eliminate it, but cut it in half by 50% or something. And then when it didn't work, in the 60s, matter of fact, virtually every economics professor laughed at it, right? And said, there's no way you're gonna ever really get rid of the business cycle. It's just the way the world is. Things go in cycles. And, now, there was a gentleman who, of course, if you saw him on TV, you don't see who he was. Some guy with kind of a cheesy beard, but he was, from Middle East someplace. Brilliant man, and he was head of some company that your magazine would write about. And, he was absolutely convinced that there's never going to be another recession because the Fed could control it, even if they had to go negative interest rates. And how did these guys get so oversold on monetary policy? I think it's confusing the economy with the stock market, maybe. Or am I wrong there?
Well, in spite of so much evidence of the contrary, it's a great question. I think there's, and it's not a direct answer, but it reminds me of a conversation I just had last weekend with a Kellogg professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg, you know, business school. And this is, it was a little bit more in a political context, but it was, the conclusion was that you just can't teach economics anymore, and not in the same manner. And his point, and boy, this goes a little adrift, but, thinking in terms of your conversation during the last segment about the current administration's foreign policies and intervention, you know, just coexisting with other governments. And he was making the point that he wanted to use as an economic example the U.S.'s participation in the United Nations, and that if you were a CEO that was been asked to take the reins of the United Nations, how would you react to the balance sheet? And the case study was looking at the balance sheet that showed all these countries that were
the balance sheet of the United Nations.
Of the United Nations. Okay. And that you were supposed to participate a certain portion of your GDP to fund the United Nations. And that invariably every student came to the conclusion that the number one flaw was that the countries were not paying their fair share and that something had to be done about that. So that was the economic side of it. He put that work together and was going to build that out in case studies that he'd use in classwork on a regular basis. But he actually got pushback from his higher-ups, basically saying that that was a political example to economics and not a business one. His point was it was purely P&L. I was just looking at the balance sheet of the UNN, and everyone came to the same conclusion that you don't have a collaborative, cooperative agency when the participants aren't paying their fair share, yet that was seemed to be too political to be taught as an economics example. And I think that's
what's wrong with politics being part of economics.
I think that's the problem we have. Maybe it's a long answer to a short question, is why don't people understand economics anymore, and maybe it's not being taught in the same manner any longer.
Well, I mean, there's three people who were into political economy big time at the University of Chicago. One that I had for class, like twice, because I love the guy, George Stigler.
Sure.
Who ended up being, well, there's somebody, Charles R. Walgreen. I don't think it's the same Walgreen from Walgreens.
It is.
I thought it was an H in it.
Yeah, no, well, Charles is, I know the younger Charles offspring from the Walgreen family. That's, okay. So I would assuming that.
I always thought, yeah. You know, but I thought there was an H in it, with W-H. W-A-H-L, but maybe not. I could be wrong. But anyway, whoever endowed that chair, it's in a political economy. The chair is for a professor of political economy. And there's been three Nobel Prize winners from that chair. Stigler and then two other guys since. The guy 2 years ago has the same comes with the same endowment, because Stigler's dead and the guy after him is dead.
Yeah.
So that's pretty spectacular, okay. when you think about it. But I don't, why would that be considered too political? I mean, on one hand, the entire world is political. On the other hand, how do people think they can stay out of it? You can't stay out of it.
I guess the point was that Trump's advocacy that the participating nations were not paying their percentage of GDP because it was the administration's position, it was a political example as opposed to an economic case.
But I thought that we were the biggest deadbeats.
No, we're not.
I thought we were for a while.
Yeah, not any longer.
Not any longer? Okay. No. Well, while we're on that subject, I was just kind of thinking it because the president, in my opinion, he's done some good things, and he reads things some ways the right way. So I'm not a full a full divisive guy concerning him. But when you lob stuff out there, I always thought, I don't know, maybe Jeff, I have a different background. When I was chairman of a committee at the CBOE for 10 years, and I always thought when you were a chairman, before you broke something, you had to have some idea of what your solution was, or else all you're doing is breaking stuff. Now, I always thought the right way of doing things was, hey, we've got this problem. You know, I was in membership, I was in the DPM committee for a while, I was on floor officials, all kinds of stuff. So I'd say, okay, we've got this problem, and here's what I think is a better way to go. And if you do it right, if the committee members participate, the solution ends up way better than the one you proposed in the first place. But at least you have to have something to start it. Now, he was talking about how he's tired of protecting. At the same time, he slapped sanctions on Iran again. and is looking to, you know, fight over there, even though he pulled it back the other day. Same time, he's saying people should protect their own oil. Now, if he really wants every oil tanker going to Britain to have a British destroyer next to it, next to our people, same thing with Japan or France or someplace, if he wants all these guys to gear up to where there's five different navies over there, is that really what he's asking for? Or is he really to turn that job over to the United Nations and say, why don't you guys require these eight countries to pony up a destroyer apiece, or we'll destroy and you command it over here, and we don't have to do it anymore? Is that his solution, or does he have none? I don't think he has none.
Well, that's a tough question. I think the reality of these scenarios always is that they're much more complicated to arrive at solutions because of competing interests and geopolitical interests, and that you can campaign on a promise, but to actually put something in play, you know, look at Obama's early pledge to end Gitmo. He had 8 years, never able to pull off that, and that seems like that'd be a pretty binary, simple thing to accomplish with, what, 50 or under 100 prisoners in Gitmo. You would think that over an 8-year period, that'd be an easily achievable thing
to
do.
We've had I'll see if Maddie can dig it out for you. We've had an attorney. You know what? I'm going to try and get him back on a day you're here. You would love it, and you'd be the perfect co-host. There's like 25 people down there that never, maybe it's 15 or 25, it's somewhere in there, out of the people that are left, that they found out never should have been there in the first place. They were just on the same block where they grabbed somebody. And they've never been wanted by Interpol, they've never been wanted by anybody.
Right.
And because they've been there, nobody in this country, with some of the mentality we have here, will let those people in this country anywhere, because they're convinced that if they got arrested, they must have been guilty of something. Their homeland, the town that they might go back to, is obliterated, so they have no place to go. So they're still at Guantanamo. And I said to them, well, you know, what do they do? Do they, like, paint the place or cook? No, they're still in their cells. There's no other place for them to be. Let me get this straight. We've got 20 people that we know didn't do anything, shouldn't have been there, and they're still in a cell every night. Well, yeah. This is America, Jeff? What are we doing?
Well, I think that highlights the fact that there's, you know, clearly with Obama being visibly and campaigning on that issue as an advocate for closing Guantanamo Bay, that the political will was there, and there has to be a reason why he wasn't able to execute. And I think that applies to so many of these scenarios that, you know, we wonder why we have so many foreign troops still stationed abroad. It should be an easy thing to pull them out. Now, of course, that contributes to your unemployment stats, and there's other political reasons why you don't. In terms of your constituency, you're basically, you know, laying off a lot of people by doing that. But that's a huge expense, part of the federal budget that we just don't need, is all these troops stationed abroad in areas that are not likely to see any type of conflict for decades to come. But we continue to have them there, and there must be reasons that, you know, there just must be too many strings involved in those decisions.
Well, why do you you can look at that one of two ways. I mean, one of the headlines today was that Trump wants to get rid of the our defense pact with Japan. I doubt if he does. He probably just wants to renegotiate it. But
that's actually a fake news story. Bloomberg came out with that story early, but there were no sources, and it was just based on, quote, musings by the president. So that that'd be an inside leak. And then a Japan foreign minister recently said within a couple of hours of that there's been no discussion, talk of that. Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, on the one hand, you look at, I mean, the world is, I don't know what, you and I have a time horizon. Well, as we're getting older, it's probably older, but obviously it's different than somebody who's 20. I mean, when you look at why are we poning up all this stuff? Well, in the 50s or the 60s, the reason why we wanted everybody at Okinawa, the reason we wanted everybody over in Germany, we wanted to control the world. We wanted the world to be our oyster. Right? And the last thing we wanted to do is have the Russians or anybody decide they want to do something different. We wanted to stop all this stuff. It's why the Chinese didn't do anything nasty in the 60s and why the Japanese are peaceful to this day. I mean, because we covered for them. Now, if we say we're not going to do that anymore, it's like pulling the dictator out of Iran when there's three groups of people there that hate each other. We're pulling the dictator out of where Kenny just was, over in Serbia. And all of a sudden, some people that are 25 here, or even me, because I don't know the history of the area, hey, wait a minute. These Serbs and these Croats, they don't like each other? Duh. Well, I mean, I'm saying the reason we're there for a reason. Now, whether the reason has got to the point where should the Japanese be ponying up half of their stuff versus us, I'll go with you on that. But at least you and I think, could go through the history. The reason why we didn't want those guys having an army and navy 10 years ago is because we didn't want them having one.
Yeah.
I mean, we wanted to be the world's big kid.
But that conversation started with the 1950s and 60s, and now, yeah. And now 70 years later, we could get anywhere we need to be for $5 billion in five to six days, so I'm not sure we need thousands of people for stationed in
I think the
overseas.
Discussion should be had, yeah. But you could also say, look how well it's worked. And if 5 years from now, China lobs one at Japan, and Japan decides they need to gear up, there's another war over there, and all of a sudden you and I are sitting there going, maybe that wasn't our best call.
And perhaps the two of us just illustrated why, after 8 years, Obama could not close Guantanamo Bay.
That's right. Well, I think part of it is that people here, for a country of, we just at a country club yesterday. And of course, if you were in a country club, if anybody can get in, why would you want to be there? So, I mean, we do have an amazing...
See, old Woody Allen statement.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it's pretty accurate. I mean, why in this country, if we have 15 people we know didn't do anything, there isn't room for them? Yet, I don't think there's a state here. There's people, if you drop those people here, they've got to be guilty of something. What are they doing down there? I mean, we lack mercy in a lot of areas for a place that's a lot of immigrants.
Sure.
You probably know this, but you know what they do down there? Is every once a month, according to what the gentleman we hit on to complete the story, the reason why he was a lawyer for there is because he had actually had experience in death penalty cases in Maryland. And since so many people, how many states don't have death penalty anymore, I guess in order for you to be an attorney on a death penalty case, you had to have been on one before, which is sort of weird, like... Before you had sex, you had to have sex before. I think it's hard to have your first time, but I guess you must be the second guy for somebody. There must be a couple times you get to be second guy and then you're okay. Anyway, so he was registered to be a death penalty attorney. So he would fly down, or he said, you down to 737, and, the judges were on there, both sides of the attorneys, all the news people, and everybody was all on a 737, and you fly down to Guantanamo. And he says there wasn't even a bar. You stayed in those containers. They put an air conditioner in a container, and that was your hotel room. I mean, you go, you stay there for 4 days. You hear all these people. You continue it. Back on the plane, you fly to Washington. Do it all again the next month. So it was the most bizarre thing you'd ever seen. There was never any progress anywhere. Except once in a while, somebody died. I mean, but then he says there's five or six people there that are legitimate death penalty candidates. There's like 15 other people that are guilty of something. There's like 15 people that are guilty of nothing. Same thing every month. It's been whittled down that much. I mean, how do you just forget about people like that forever? I mean, I don't know. I'm with you on that. And you're right. Why did Obama? I guess at some point you just stopped trying, or you're like George Bush. I mean, after 9/11, I mean, who knows what the guy really wanted to accomplish? Because his whole presidency was taken over.
That's right.
I think you get overcome by events. I mean, how would you like to run? And I would say you'd be a hell of a candidate. And all of a sudden you get in there, and three wars crop up around the world, and you go, that's not why I'm here. But that's what you have to deal with, right? I mean, it's sort of an interesting world. All right, we'll do that. Not just because Jeff's here, we do this every day. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and profitability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jacks listeners receive a free digital subscription to luckboxmagazine.com/Jacks. I recommend that. And obviously, if Jeff is involved, you know it's pretty darn good. SP Futures down 350. NASDAQ Futures down 12. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Jeff Joseph. Should have Mr. John Neal. In a minute, we have Mr. Matt Weber already. S&P futures down 375. NASDAQ futures down 13. Been pretty much here all morning, down to a little bit. Nothing major. We ducked down again yesterday on the close. We're getting weak on the close lately for the last few days, which is somewhat of unusual compared to lately as we've kind of gone off. But still, we had a big week last week, and we're down just a little bit, so I don't think there's anything to worry about. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX. This is the slowest day I've seen here in a while. DAX up 1, call that flat. FTSE up, down 7.1%. CAC around down 6.1%. Asia a little more action. Nikkei down 92, that's 0.4%. Shanghai down 26, that's 0.9. Hang Seng down 327, that's a full 1.2. Oil down 26 cents. West Texas, 40 cents. Brent, natural gas down a penny, 2.29. I'm wondering, Jeff, if some point in the next couple of months, since that thing popped to 3-something last year with the cold winter, the cold few days, if somewhere along the line our natural gas qualify might be something, but it's such a huge contract. It's so hard to do. Arbob 185 gold with the winner these days. 1431 on the gold, up 1350. Silver up 3 cents. 1540. Remember how it could never get through 15?
Yeah.
I went through 15 like dinners were goose, for God's sake. Right. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking pretty good on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Normal traffic volumes building on the Edens and Kennedy. Same on the Eisenhower. That earlier crash at 25th Avenue is all clear. Stevenson, we had a crash out in Bolingbrook that was clear, and then a new one just came across before Weber Road, right near the same area there, northbound side of I-55. So keep that in mind. That has I-55 pre-jammed up out in the southwestern suburbs. At least on the inbound side. Outbound side looks okay. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking good. No accidents or issues to report. Only other crash in the area is off the expressways, Northern Burbs, Route 22 eastbound at Prairie Road. We have an accident. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, summer is finally here, as we'll be in the 80s the rest of the week and going forward. It looks like today a nice day, but much warmer. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 85. Right now it's clear and 66 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 105. Right now it's clear and 75. In sports, Cubs have won 2 straight. They took care of the Braves last night at Wrigley 8-3. White Sox blew a 5-3 lead in Boston, losing to the Red Sox on a walk-off infield hit. 6-5 was the final in that one. Diamondbacks took care of the Dodgers down in Phoenix 8-5.
We're talking a little bit on break, Jeff and I. Johnny, with us?
Not yet.
Okay. On break, look at this Allergan AbbVie deal, and obviously the big gorilla in the room is the Botox, right? I mean, that's what you use, Allergan's product and Allergan's product. And but, you know, Jeff, if you use it, I mean, whatever product it is, and I don't know what, you know, anything maybe you've used your whole life that you sort of needed, but for me, I had the world's worst vision in high school, and I loved to play sports. And in those days, they didn't have any glasses that, you know, you could make them thinner or anything like you can now. So I basically had the Coke bottle glasses, and even though I was pretty athletic, I hated them. Couldn't play golf with them, or you could, but it was, you know, they were lousy. So the minute I could get into contact lenses, at age like 15 or 14, I was in them, right? And I've been in them ever since, even though now I wear glasses on the computer more than I used to. But still, when I do anything else, it's, I got the contact lens in. And you always had to buy contact lens solution. Right?
Right.
And Allergan was in it from the get-go, and I think Barnes and Hines was probably in it. There's sort of a duopoly. And every time somebody new came on the market, I mean, it was Mr. Boston that was sold through the optometrist for a while, and then, of course, they got some shelf space, then one of them bought them. I think it might have been Barnes and Hines. But just in that little tiny piece of the industry, by being just not quite competitive, there's always been, like, I think, 2 companies that had shelf space. And that's when people say, you know, why does the chief always rag on any of these little duopolies and stuff? I'm going to say, Jeff, for 40-some years, every time I bought something, a thing, a contact lens solution, which you don't buy that often,
right.
But it's not so, I'm going to say I paid $2 to $3 more per jug or whatever you want to call it than I would have had to have had it been competitive. You know, it's not something I'm going to get a sandwich sign and walk up and down the Justice Department. It's not something I'm really going to think twice about at the, you know, at the store. But I know it in the back of my head.
Well, you just define the premium
on
Allergan, because that's the case with Botox.
Yep.
Right.
And, but even something as simple as that, you notice is, you know, if it is allowed to be non-competitive over a long period of time, it's even if it's a dollar or two every time. How many people in the country wear contact lenses? And if it's $2 every 3 months, it's a lot of dough.
It's a lot of dough.
And, sure. Which is interesting. I mean, you know how much you shop or family members shop or whatever, but I shop because I do the show and I observe. I mean, I try to observe anyway. And, one of the things that's interesting is if you go in these, big box stores like the Myers's of the world, someplace, and obviously Costco, those kind of, what you see is the store's getting bigger and the amount of brands getting smaller. I don't know if you would agree with that. But it's harder and harder to get shelf space. And one of the reasons is these firms are grinding the name brands down to where they want everything to be a private brand. So, and if you walk into a Myers, you're not going to see Noxzema shave cream. that space is taken up by Meyer Shave Cream. And you might have two other, instead of having four brands, you'll see two plus the private plant brand. Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah, but certainly true.
And I saw last night, there's an one of these analysts were talking about an outfit called Shopify. What they're trying to do is become an Amazon for other people. In other words, if you want to order Maxima Shave Cream or something else you might not see anymore, these guys are going to be distributors from people that can't. They're going to be a local, an Amazon model that you can order things from them and have it delivered in a day or two, just like it was from Amazon. But they're holding themselves out to some places that can't get the shelf space and name brands that maybe you used to buy and now you don't anymore. It's interesting. I mean, I wonder what it says right here. Key point at scale: Shopify expects fulfillment will allow merchants to deliver 99% of the continental U.S. within 2 days or less, making it more competitive with Amazon. In our view, this is Goldman Sachs. Shopify is getting to the point which the breadth of product, the vibrancy of partner ecosystem, and general retail scale will enable the firm to pull away at an exponential. So they're going to be an Amazon for essentially to compete with the big boxes that are squeezing people out. I wonder. I mean, I have no idea whether anybody should buy it or not buy it. I mean, I don't, you know, I would never recommend anything anyway, but interesting concept, isn't it? It is interesting in America, Jeff, that if things go way too far one way, somebody has an idea to bring it back the other way, don't they?
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think that's what you're saying with Shopify. They've been working on this model for some time. I know that, you know, they were trying to find the balance between not competing with Amazon and finding another solution to traditional brick and mortar. And it's interesting the perspective that you put on it, because it's true. What they are trying to be the platform for is brand loyalties. So you mentioned Maxima, that's an older brand that still has a lot of brand loyalty associated with it. And if you can identify a source to deliver a brand that you still have brand loyalty for, and it's not available through your traditional brick and mortar outlet or your big box store, there's an opportunity for Shopify. So Shopify is really trying to take on Amazon's distribution model at the same time with brand awareness, brand loyalty behind it.
And they're welcoming, like, direct Kellogg's to Shopify type distribution, mm-hmm. You know, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know hey, Jan, how are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Well, good. Give me one more. You know, how can I say this politically correctly? When's the last time you bought mouthwash? if you go in like the big Myers aisle, because I go there, it's right near where my girlfriend lives, so I'm there at 6 o'clock every Sunday morning. Everybody else is still sleeping, the dogs and everybody's still sleeping. If you go in the mouthwash aisle, you see the Listerine and the rest of them, and you'll see the original Listerine. Okay, and right next to it, there's a Myers. Same color,
right.
Same whatever. But if you walk down the aisle,
it's like $2 cheaper, right?
Yeah, it's like $2 cheaper. Then it'll be the mint one, and then it'll be the Myers right next to it. But you get to the end, and it'll be like, I'll say a purple one. It's Listerine's latest and greatest type of thing. You'll pick it up, and on the bottom of the label, it'll say, this has never been sold to anybody for private labeling. So there's actually, and it's more expensive than the other Listerines. And there'll be like maybe two of them. They're two best, you know, complete mouth care. You know, God knows there's how many Listerines on the market now, like 10. But the last two or three, they'll tell you right on the label, Jeff,
that
they've never sold it to Myers. So in other words, it's not in any of those other jugs that say Myers. which is, did you ever think we'd come to that? I mean, retailing is a bizarre world. I mean, if you and I decided to have, and Jan, we decided to have a beer company. Well, I think the beer aisle at the Walmarts and those places, I know the bread aisles, aren't they totally stacked, Jan, by the distributor, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you might, you'll see, you know, any of the big ones in there, whether, you know, it be Miller or Sam Adams, whatever. You'll see the biggies in there, and then in order to get in there, let's say you're Howl Beers.
Yeah.
You know, you better have an agreement with them because... You need to have somebody to bring it into the store, another beer distributor.
We're not going to mention Dan's name of his beer, Bomb Shelter?
Okay, bomb shelter. We'll put bomb shelter in there, but better have some sort of relationship with, you know, one of the biggies.
Otherwise, Jeff, I'm sure you know this, but otherwise, if you and I distributed bomb shelter or Luckbox beer, we literally would have to, a guy would have to show up and say we got a deal with Myers, we'll give you shelf space for 12 six-packs. Our guys have to show up and put the 12 six-packs up there, unless we cut a deal with the Miller guy to do it for us.
Yeah, spirits is very different. There's only a handful of distributors in each state, and you must buy from the distributor. You're not cutting in individual dealers with the distiller or the brewer. Right. So, you know, the distributors like the Wirtz family in Illinois, they're one of the people.
Southern, yeah.
They in Southern, right, they clearly own liquor distribution.
Well, but I'm saying, but I think the bread aisle is the same way. If you don't, I mean, when Walmart and Myers is not stocked yet, the bread guys do. So if you and I decided to have an unusual flavor of bread, and they say, okay, we'll let you put 20 loaves up there, you and I better show up ourselves, or else, which is no way we can make any money, if you and I have to show up and put 12 4-hour loaves of bread up there, right?
Right.
So we end up having to cut that deal. Anyway, forget about all that, John. Tweets and world news, the market's kind of becoming immune a little bit, other than and gold going up and some of the, why all of a sudden, with the Fed going to be lowering interest rates, why all of a sudden, as my brother Dan, president of PTI, mentions, because he watches we have some guys up here that do the tips, that all of a sudden inflation expectations in the last 3 weeks have started to move. After all these years, why all of a sudden are they starting to move? And I have no clue.
Well, I'm no expert there either, to be honest with you.
Jeff, are you seeing anything in the real world? I mean, we've discussed inflation before when you've been in here, and we think that there's always been pockets. I mean, obviously in drugs and those kind of places, but why generally in the last 3 weeks have all of a sudden these indexes started to move?
Well, there's not enough evidence of any material inflation. That's clearly the case. Otherwise, the Fed wouldn't even be contemplating an easement. I mean, you know, because that'd be an easy thing to rule out. So it's a good question.
Do you believe that?
Well, on a net basis, there's clearly, as you said, there's pockets of inflation, but you know, I can think of more examples on a daily basis where costs are coming down in certain areas and then they're going up.
Because I'm totally on the opposite view of that, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why is that I think the pockets are so huge that they're actually causing the rest to go down. The medical education,
Medical education, that's true.
Medical and education if you take somebody who's, I say this all the time, so if somebody's making 50 grand a year and his medical expenses go from 500 a month to 1500 a month, you've just eviscerated the guy. He's not buying the new TV.
That's very true. And I don't disagree with that. I'm talking about more, you know, with respect to merchandise. We were just researching something for the next issue of Luckbox magazine. We'll have a large music section. And we were looking at the economics of music, of ticket sales for concerts.
Really? Okay.
And oddly enough, those three things, and you just pegged the first two. So the highest inflation in any sector, in any narrow sector, has been college tuition costs first, and that was, I think it was since 19, I forget the time period, so I don't want to quote the numbers wrong, but just for benchmarking this, that was like 214%, and then it was 190% for medical care, and then 139% over that same time period was for concert tickets, and those are the three highest pockets of inflation.
You know what? Well, the Cubs are probably an outlier, but when we first got our 305 seats in 1982, Big Don got his weekends and holidays on the upper deck, the seats we still had a few years ago. In 1981, guess how much those seats were, first or upper deck? Jan, feel free to pile in.
I have no idea. I got a thought, though, when you're done with it.
Well, they're about $80 now, so I'll give you a clue.
Okay.
75 or something. Jeff, hazard a guess?
No guess.
$3.50.
$3.50.
So if you plunk that in the...
There were $3.50?
Yep.
Jesus.
If you plunk...
Are you like 100 years old?
I'm saying they were. If you plunk that in the CPI calculator...
I think that's how much my high school games cost.
Okay. Well, I'm talking about Upper Deck. You're talking about the Matty, up until that point, the upper deck was closed during the week.
I know. That sounds crazy to me. I was going to guess $12, and I would be four times higher.
Well, it sounds right. In the book that we're looking at, it's called Rockonomics, which is by Alan Krueger, who's recently deceased, but he worked under Austin Goosby on President Obama's Economic Council.
He's still on TV all the time.
Austin Goose, yeah. Yeah, I've met him on a number of occasions. He's a wonderful man.
He's like a pretty bright guy.
Yeah, he's a bright guy and very, very affable and personable.
You think if we asked him to be in, he would be in?
That's a possibility. He's not too far away.
Really? Was he in North Chicago now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a Chicago guy. But in Rockonomics, which is about the economics of the music industry, it said that one of the reasons that ticket prices have inflated so quickly in recent years is that they were so materially underpriced in the early years. And they used the inflation-adjusted price for a Beatles three-day concert in New York in the late 60s was a ticket price of $4.40, which on an inflation-adjusted basis would be $35 today. And last night, some of my colleagues were trying to find last-minute tickets to see the Stones for $400. So concert ticket prices were really underpriced in the past, as were the baseball tickets, which I think explains.
Well, I don't know if they were that, I mean, given the time. But still, when you look at the numbers are dramatic. I mean, you look at my fourth year education in Notre Dame. If you plunk that in the CPI calculator, it would be like $18,000.
Yeah.
And it's 70. I mean, yeah. So somewhere along the line,
sure,
the CPI is not giving you the right picture.
Yeah.
The other thing
with these, if you talk about these concert tickets like you're talking about, I had a great example you said is with the Stones. I was looking, and there's still a few seats here to the show that's going to be here. They have some seats that are $1,500, and that's not a scalper.
Sure.
I mean, you get the special, this, that, and the other thing. You would think you get to meet the band, but oh no, you definitely don't get to meet the band. But in my days of starting to go see these shows, you would get a $10 ticket, just like everybody else. It was all general admission, so that's part of what's changed. So if you've got the money, you can get the best tickets now. You waited all day in line.
You nailed
it. Rushed to get in.
That's exactly the commentary in the book, is that I forget what year that occurred, but there was once a point where all seats were priced the same before they went toward a price discrimination policy. But all seats used to be priced the same way. And that's one of the big changes. And now, even though they have tiered pricing, the best seats end up in the hands of scalpers who then add a premium on top of that.
I'm gonna point you guys to a great American novel, and I'm going to, what you both just said, by the way, I love you both. When you waited in line, because my buddies in college would do this all the time. They'd go wait in line, wait in line, wait in line. You know, of course, they're always high as a kite. And, not that any of them were ever on the show. They would never be on the show, right, because they were high as a kite. They said, how come we can never get the first 10 rows? And I'm a dum-dum in college. I go, don't you guys get it? The first 10 rows are not available. They're already going to the scalpers. If you read the book The Godfather, they were talking about a concert, you know, like the first 50 pages. Same part of the book where they were talking about Sonny's unusual size, shall we say. And they talked about the concert, the seats are going to be this, and the scalpers are going to get the first 10 rows. You don't think these guys were that stupid that somebody like me could walk and wait in line and get a first row seat, do you?
No.
I mean, the scalpers always got the first 10 rows at what price? What do you think they got them for, triple or double the regular price? Probably wasn't like today, but I mean, nobody ever got those for face value, I don't think. But, you know, I don't know. Anyway, so
that's
the,
fair to say.
But how much you think it is that the supply was bigger? I mean, when I say that, when I was in college, we had a band every weekend at Notre Dame. It was a serious band. And they, like the guys at the time, you know, Jethro Tull played colleges. I mean, Rolling Stones aren't going to play Notre Dame, for God's sake.
Right.
I mean, do you think it's...
Well, back then they would have played, like, the stadium or something like that. That'd be a different, you know, whatever stadium you had.
We were inside. We were in a basketball arena. There weren't very few people that I didn't see. Well, Jethro Tull we saw on a Monday night, so they gave him a break. But we're talking about a fantastic concert. But we saw Three Dog Night, Chicago, I can't remember, Santana. I mean, virtually everybody made their trip through, and these guys would do a college every Saturday night. I mean, you know, even the smaller colleges. But now nobody does that. Right? And when did all that start?
Bands still do colleges all the time.
Well, but
just not the huge bands.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There were 20 huge bands. I'm not saying the Rolling Stones ever did like something like that, but there were a lot of smaller bands, and we saw Creedence Clearwater. We saw, you know what I'm saying? How many times a year does, how many times in 5 years, let's put it that way, do the Rolling Stones play? It's, you know, it's a different dynamic.
They're in that maybe 10 bands in the world that can do that. They're one of 10, and it might even be less than that. I mean, who else is going to do stadiums? I mean, you might have Garth Brooks, you might have U2, you might have, this Roger Waters or Pink Floyd. I mean, that's about it. I mean, like I said, Garth Brooks, you know, maybe a couple acts like that. But, I mean, who else is going to, can do that? Hardly anybody.
Well, I guess my question is, are there 10 bands comprised of, I'll use the term, young people, that go around and play like these guys were young when we saw them, or when I saw them?
There's a lot of young bands out there, that's for sure.
Can they fill up a University of Illinois basketball arena or something?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, most certainly. I mean,
absolutely.
There's some...
And they do?
The young people listen to today, like Radiohead, which will, you know, sell out the most basketball arenas. That's, you know, one of these young people like today. There's quite a few that will do that, the basketball arenas. But the football stadiums, that's another.
Yeah, I never saw anything like that. So I guess what is, Jeff, the long way of getting there is, so is the industry vibrant? It sounds like they are.
Very much so. This afternoon I'm speaking with Danny Wimmer, who is the CEO of Danny Wimmer Presents, which is the one of the largest independent music promoters in the U.S. He has 15 live music festivals going on right
now.
The Open Air Festival that was in Chicago not too long ago, 2 day.
Does he do the big one here?
He doesn't do Lala, no, yeah. And he doesn't do Riot Fest, but he does Bourbon and Beyond. He has 15 festivals nationwide right now, and we're going
to. He's got to be fascinating to talk to.
We'll be speaking about the economics of music, and I'll learn a little bit more for next week when I come back.
I'm going to say, we'll have a complete report next week.
Absolutely,
that should be fun. You and John, and I promise to shut up. How's that? Just let you guys. Is that it? Maddie? Just turn off my mic. It's the only way it'll ever happen.
I wrote it down.
Tuesday. Turn off Chief's mic. Let's have a decent show for a change. Anyway, thank you guys. S&P futures down only 1.25 down. Jan, what are we going to keep leaking on the close here, or are we going to do something this week?
I think it might taper a little bit on this gold, but we'll see. Just a breather. They'll pull back on a breather, and then it's going to keep moving.
I'm all the way out to September in my calls. How bad is that? We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.